Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Welcome back to the Lozcast. For those of you that aren't threading or tweeting, today I'm joined by one of the only people in the world who isn't threading or tweet. Is it, do you call it threading, Jamie?
I think we're on threading.
Yeah, it's Jamie Slevin. Welcome back to the podcast.
Lawrence, Jamie.
I'm good, thank you. I'm a little bit, I don't know, this kind of thing is kind of my jam. Launching new apps, I'm the first person to sign up for iOS 17. That's not a fact. I'm just one of the first people. I love technology, products, all this kind of thing. And so when I saw that Instagram was launching a rival to Twitter, or what they were calling a Twitter killer, naturally, I was hooked. I went straight to Instagram. I typed the Threads thing into the search bar, and up came the admit one ticket that everyone got. I clicked it straight away. I had it pre-installed on my phone, so as soon as it kind of came out, there it was. It was waiting for me when I woke up this morning, sitting.
Yeah, it's cool. And the thing that made it exciting to me is you obviously have the backdrop of, are Musk and Elon going to fight in the Colosseum? And it's like, well, okay, well, now we're on two fronts. We're on the tech front and the fists in the air front.
How much do you believe it? And how much do you think that really the whole Musk thing and versus Zuckerberg is just both of them kind of vying for attention globally, and both of them realizing, like, you know, if I'm in the spotlight, then my company's in the spotlight?
My base assumption was it's not going to happen. They're just fighting for that attention. But the more I read about it, the more I think it's going to happen.
Right.
White, the UFC director, is talking to them daily on the phone.
Is that not also... So I think you're being sucked in here. I mean, I get it. Maybe are they both already train already. I think Dana White also wants to play into this. So Dana White, clearly politically aligned with at least one of these two guys. I think probably they're quite pally in the first place. There's probably a whole load of, I don't want to say political crossover or political interest, but all three of them get some good promo from it. Dana White's the go-to guy for this fight all of a sudden. It's a weird one.
It's also worth saying, like, as much as they are rivals, Musk and Elon, and we'll get into that today, they also were two of, like, only 10 people in the world who can relate to each other. There'll be some level of friendship or pally.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I'm thinking here is, like, you know, obviously partly what made this an interesting podcast to me was that on the face of it, we feel like we know everything. I don't feel like we know all that much, and I feel we're very subject to, in a non-conspiratorial way, quite a lot of smoke and mirrors and quite a lot of PR here. It's not really so much people hiding, so much as kind of hiding in plain sight, not to, you know, again, conspiracy theory this.
So you were on Threads this morning, obviously.
Obviously.
What's been your first impression?
Good question. Sorry, I took a sip of tea at the wrong time. Very basic to start off. Clearly a pound-for-pound copy of Twitter. But maybe that is what Instagram and Meta see themselves as being good at. It's just Meta and Instagram. They see themselves being good at that. Remember when Snapchat was almost trying to kill Instagram, and they were talking about buying each other, and there was this whole "we'll buy you" or "you'll buy us" kind of thing. Instagram just went, cool, we'll just launch stories. And then they launched stories, which was so similar to what Snapchat was doing, and vice versa. They had the circles. I don't think Instagram had the circles before that. Then they suddenly did. All this kind of thing.
Yeah, Reels were in response to TikTok.
Right.
I think the point is, for a company as big and at this point institutional as Meta, you have the capital and the user base to just not take risks. You can allow someone else to be the first mover and then just copy it yourself, link it all up together, happy days.
So the interesting aspect, I guess, of that is I think Apple is quite different to, so their approach is quite different to Facebook. So, and this was quite revealing when Apple launched the Vision Pro and Zuckerberg went straight on, I can't remember what the podcast was called, but it's, you know, it's that podcast where the guy,
Lex Fridman,
that's it. He kind of uses an AI bot to interview people, right?
Well, he was the one training with both.
Oh, was he?
Zuck and Musk.
Wow, so he's in that circle to an extent now. Is he Jack Dorsey now in this whole...
Yeah, I'm sure he is. And he's mates with Joe Rogan.
Right.
Sam Harris.
Is he mates with them, or is this like a sort of... are these all relationships of convenience, is what I'm asking, or kind of public relationship? I'd imagine there's maybe some mutual respect, but surely the competition these guys are all experiencing means they aren't bosom buddies, like friends like we are.
I think, well, with Lex, though, he just comes in and has an interview and will train Brazilian jiu-jitsu and isn't in direct competition.
Right. So, but he is. That's a whole other conversation. So cool. I get it. He was on that. And he kind of said, look, you know, Apple make the premium stuff. We make the affordable stuff. And that kind of revealed a bit of, I guess, first of all, their marketing, like Facebook see themselves as a more affordable company. But weirdly, like, you know, Apple is the most sold product in the world. Any Apple product is probably one of the most sold products in the world and therefore most profitable. And on top of that, he talked about, well, if they're, you know, it's good that Apple are doing this because then we'll do this. So he's kind of talking about opening up the space. What I'm saying is, I feel like this is a carbon copy of Twitter when it first launched, really. It is very, very similar. And my first thought was, this is almost too clean.
Yeah. So
I think like Twitter, by the way, when it first launched, which, by the way, was back in 2006, March. But they completed, and the completed version of Twitter debuted in July 2006. So it went from being... TWTTR to Twitter.
Look, when businesses are brand new and they're startups, they talk about being disruptive and innovative and they burn lots of capital. Then you look across the room and the big institutional, we've got half the markets.
Yep.
They do no innovation, basically.
Yep.
And that's their big disadvantage. But they're just awesome at copying the first mover. I think Facebook and Meta have basically just gone, oh, Twitter does this thing. Well, what happens if we replicate it? And trying not to mess anything up.
That's interesting. Well, but they're Meta.
Right, and you've mentioned the very clean, maybe too clean.
Because it's, by the way, it's being marketed as a friendly alternative to Twitter.
Okay, so this opens up a question that I'm interested in your view on.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more spacey than Twitter. And the wording, the actual letters, much fewer on the line, much more space, a little bit softer. Do you think that aesthetic is going to change the type of discourse?
Oh, 100%. Like this is a total, the medium is the message. Everything that you're looking at feels very clean. I mean, obviously it's only day one. They've got 17 years head start on Twitter, and they don't really seem all that far ahead, though the functionality is obviously different. Not all that different though. You know, the base premise of both apps are the same. I guess I just looked at it and went, I kind of go on Twitter because I like a bit of that, like the rough and tumble, the dirty side of it. They're like, who am I going to see roasting who today? Or like, which journalist is going to reveal this? I don't know if I'm going to see some sort of Egyptian revolution on Meta.
On Threads.
On Threads or anything on Meta.
Yeah, you know what's funny is like with Twitter, people are super funny. Mm. Like people on Twitter are like the funniest people in the world. And it's because of that edge, that bite. Like,
yeah.
They kind of coexist.
Yeah.
You can't be the funniest platform with the sharpest barbs and also have a big smile and a big glossy California.
Right. Oh. But is that like, so this is part, I mean, this is partly it, right? Is I get that we're launching this alternative and a lot of people say, well, alternatives have been launched before. Even if you just type in Twitter alternative, you know, people have tried launching Clubhouse. They see Reddit as an alternative. Discord, some people thought was a more interactive version. I suppose Reddit and Tumblr are kind of falling into that. Those two now have their own lives. LinkedIn is not, definitely not. This list is bizarre. But then there's also something called Blue Sky as well, which was obviously a derivative of that. So there have been lots of alternatives. It's just Hive was another one. Mastodon was another one. Counter Social was another one. I don't even know what fucking Counter Social is. And then there was another one. What was that? Like all the ones that like Donald Trump launched. You remember when there was this big...
I saw his pitch deck.
Right.
Did you? I got my hands on Donald Trump.
Was he pitching to you?
Yeah, personally. He was fundraising for this media company, and they were going to take on the five, as far as they were concerned, Simon Blakehead's Netflix, Amazon, all in one product.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix, Amazon, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatever it was.
Right. Was he stoned when he sent you this?
Yeah. This was like a mate.
Right.
Was at the company... It pitched in.
I had a friend, I lived with I had a flatmate once who was Australian. Not nice enough guy, but also not nice enough guy. Had like a bit of a weird side to him. He lived there with his girlfriend. It was me and just him and his girlfriend, right?
It's just Ash's resentment coming out.
Oh no, totally not. But then it should be. He got stoned quite a lot in the flat. And I walked into the living room one day to iron something. And I'm ironing and he's like, bro, I've got this idea, right? And I was like, okay, yeah. And I was always entertained by him, so I'd like entertain him. I was like, go on, man. He goes, so it's an app that like, if you want a car, it gets you a car. If you want food, it gets you food. If you want, you know, whatever you want, it lets you like tweet and do all this stuff, and, like, but all in one app. And I was like, that's like iOS 13 at that time. And he was like, yeah. I'm Steve Jobs. And I was like, how high are you? And it made me think, like, I think a lot of people think it's easier than it is to even get a scrollable feed that you can kind of just get people to communicate in. And I feel like that is like, that's what they're really wrestling with here. Like, I love the cleanliness of Instagram. I obviously go on Instagram because I feel like it's safe. Or because I feel like I'm getting like some nice clean photos of some architecture or someone's trip to Spain or something that they've managed to somehow take through Lightroom and put out on the platform. I don't go to Meta for this like in-depth New York Timesy kind of thing. But maybe that's because I feel like Twitter feels like a more like, you know, you can like supercharge it. You can attach, like, you know, you can put NOS in the back of your car and stuff. That it feels a bit like it almost encourages you to do that.
As far as Meta are concerned, that's a headache to run. If I was running and moderating a platform, give me California sunny bullshit.
Right.
Over like edgelords verging on the brink of hate speech.
Right. And misinformation and what is information? Who do you correct? Who don't you correct?
Like if Donald Trump had been banned from Instagram, no one would have cared. Because like what? He's not going to, his PR team aren't going to put out a picture of him golfing.
Right.
But on Twitter.
They care.
They care because it's the nature of Twitter, obviously being a language share, it's a conversation sharing platform.
Right.
It feels much more personal.
Right.
And also with Twitter, we're very much used to, I think, people just saying the thing on their minds. So if you're banned from Twitter, you feel muted.
He just says what we're all thinking.
All of us.
Yeah. So. He just says what we're all thinking. Just says it. That was interesting. That's so interesting. I'd almost forgotten that whole Donald Trump period where people would be like hanging on his every word, and it would be him and Kanye West like going, not going back and forth, but just like tweeting in two separate universes.
Yeah. I think if you're Mark Zuckerberg, you can do without all of that.
Sure. But then that did help the marketing of Twitter. I feel like a lot of people will have signed up for Twitter to see the Trump tweets or to see the yay tweets at that time. And that will have driven some form of like sign up, right?
Okay, so actually, it's a good point. There is a benefit. There's a pro and a con to being a nightmarish platform to run. On the one hand, it's chaos to run, and everyone criticizes you for being too free speech, no free speech enough, too left, too right, but this, that. Equally, though, Kanye's on the weird one, and those people sign up. Happy days.
So unpack that for me, though. Like, how then do Twitter or Threads encourage people now to sign up? Like, you know, because what we were discussing was the political leanings of both parties, and I think you laid that out quite well.
So my sense is, and this is loose, by the way, Meta and Instagram and that whole universe leans center left. That's the user base. It's young. It's often American. Twitter feels, especially in the Musk era, as quite right-wing or quite polarizing.
Sure.
And one of the big criticisms Twitter are getting at the moment is this is a place where hate speech is festering. So in some ways, I think it's quite easy for Mark Zuckerberg to come in and position Threads as, hey, it's like Twitter, but with none of the bad bits. And he'll be defining bad bits in terms of hate speech.
Right. But and so that's where I guess I ideologically differ from him, but I don't, I think... Maybe, actually, no, maybe I don't. Yeah, I do ideologically differ from him. I think everyone deserves some free speech. I think everyone deserves, well, free speech is absolutely right. It can't be some free speech. So free speech, you either, everyone is speaking freely or there is no free speech. Am I wrong about that?
I don't know. The case that makes me pause is if someone went up and was organizing and inciting racial hatred, we would draw a line at that probably. So free speech has some kind of limit, because if I organized a rally, a racist, violent rally on that platform, you could say, well, look, all speech is free speech, but you might also say, hang on, at some point there's a line.
Yeah, right. And I understand what you're saying. I still think that that is still enacting free speech. So I'm totally against someone organizing a racist rally. But... And I guess then there are two things that intersect. Why would you intervene? First of all, would you intervene on moral grounds? Because if you want a platform where there's free speech, can you be moral? Or would you intervene on commercial grounds where you go, well, actually, we just can't be seen to have racists and, you know, in the interest of free speech, pedophiles, you know, they can speak freely as well. You know, we can't be seen to have those people on because you can't advertise next to a pedophile. Or a racist. I put them in similar categories.
I like that answer because it actually is the perfect one for social media companies. They can say, hey, we are pro-free speech, but look, it's illegal, and it is illegal, to incite racial hatred.
Yes.
Which is an interesting point.
And also to be a paedophile.
Yeah, so there's no legal system in the world, to my knowledge, that supports total free speech. In the UK, for example, it's illegal to incite racial hatred.
Right.
So, the thing that makes me pause about free speech is as soon as you introduce a line, and you might argue that in the UK, legally, it's a legal protective reason, it's not ethical. But as soon as you introduce something that represents an ethical line about free speech, it becomes very, very difficult to understand where that line should be drawn.
Right.
Equally, it feels quite offensive not to have the line. So it's this classic, you're damned if you do, because, oh, like, well, who's controlling the line? And it's now all political. But if you don't, you're now seeming to permit all sorts of rubbish stuff.
Let's discuss why that's important in the next section.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
So I kind of want to pick up off your previous point, but also add something to it, right? If free speech is very important, and I think every platform starts off with these set of ideals that they want to adhere to, right? And I think the practicality of enabling and providing free speech on a platform which is inherently not going to be able to show everyone, and you know, you have to an extent editorialize. Editorialism in itself is a form of censorship, because obviously you're choosing what to put in and put out. So to an extent, of course, there is a political and social decision that every platform has to make as to A, what you want to see, and B, what someone else wants to see of you. So it's kind of interesting because I do think this is probably where AI, and I guess the smarter computers get, the better we can enable free speech. But I think we're always, it's always a goal rather than where we can be. It's always got to be the North Star. It can't be anything else. And to an extent, I think people on Instagram and Twitter and all these places, they feel a bit let down by the fact that they can't achieve like Nirvana. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. And actually, you're right. The existence of an algorithm is
inherently censoring.
Inherently censoring.
Yeah.
And to illustrate the point, if you said, well, only right-wing content is going to be shown on the newsfeed and no left-wing content, okay, well, of course that's censoring. But it's just a matter of degree. The question then just becomes, does Meta and do Threads have a view on that that's seeming to satiate the free speech demand? And the answer is no.
There's no, but there's also no way they can't, so that they have to take a view on that. I think Meta automatically has to take a view on A, political positions, but B, how you can influence political positions, because in the past, there is, I mean, whether you consider it true or not, whether you want to be a conspiracy theorist or not, whether you want to go down that road, Meta as a company has been implicated in influencing people's opinions and the bubbles within which those people exist. So I'm not exactly like thrilled, like, you know, cool, it's a cool new platform. I don't think they're saving the day by any extent. I think not the opposite, but yeah, and I know no one's really saying that they've saved the day. But to an extent, the marketing is, we've come in as an alternative to Twitter because people are sick of it. So that there's a good wave of sentiment behind them.
It is interesting because Facebook, Meta, is a private company.
Yeah.
Twitter is a private company. Mm-hmm. They have shareholders. They have corporate incentives.
Yeah.
And they're the people with the most influence in changing public opinion, creating or destroying echo chambers. And then you have this emergent conversation about responsibility.
Yeah.
So if I'm a private company, which just happens to nail my UX and my product marketing and my advertising, and now I have all this power, at what point does my accumulation of power mean I have a responsibility to democracy, to all of these other values?
And how do you, and is that your responsibility to regulate that, or is that someone else's responsibility to regulate you? And on top of that, you know, what is your responsibility towards? Is your responsibility towards the shareholders of the company, or is your responsibility towards the wider, you know, is everyone a shareholder in a public discourse app to an extent?
This is where libertarianism is really interesting.
Right.
Because the libertarian idea in a sentence is, do whatever you want, government doesn't get involved, as long as it doesn't affect other people.
But that, okay, I'll let you unpack that thought. There's an inherently, obviously a problem within that.
Right, so the idea is, well, the government shouldn't tell me I can't smoke. Okay, but my smoking affects other people because they pick up the healthcare bill, etc. It's the same deal here. Meta's, in theory, libertarian responsibility is to build a platform and to affect their shareholders positively. And that's fine. Until, like with the libertarian argument, you run into this problem. There's no such thing really as a contained action. And if you want to say, well, look, there is a responsibility for someone like Meta beyond the shareholders, I think the way to do it is just to argue these actions aren't self-contained. They have huge implications. And as soon as your actions start having huge implications, there's an automatic emergent responsibility. I think that's the case you'd have to make.
So I guess on top of that then, how does Meta, what is it that Meta's actually trying to do here? And I think to an extent, this is a marketing exercise. Obviously, the whole of Meta is a marketing exercise. But to an extent, I think this is a marketing exercise and a bit of a shot across the bows of Twitter. Frankly, it made me miss Twitter when I was on it. The spacing was all wrong. Some of the replies to my own initial thread, I couldn't see. The functionality was obviously off. It was day one, so I'll forgive them on that. But I kind of think that you need some form of functionality working early on for me to be sucked in by this.
What do you think would constitute success for Meta here?
I think just attracting more people towards their own platform, but I'm not sure how many new people they're going to gain from this. They already have 2.35 billion active users, as they say, on Instagram. And the two accounts are linked in the first place. And very often, in order to now validate your Instagram account, you need a Facebook account. So, and, you know, obviously WhatsApp at some point will probably be linked into all those things. And then there was another tweet by, I think it is just Jack Dorsey this morning, talking about how Twitter basically, Meta and Threads want your information. They want pretty much the maximum amount of information they can take from your phone. People reminded him Twitter's not all that far behind. There's only four boxes that Twitter don't tick, but you know, there's something there as well. Meta are a business. There's no advertising at the moment on Threads. There's nothing else. It's just, they're just trying to get users, right? They're going through like a very public launch, which is, again, in itself unusual.
But you kind of, I think, struck both sides of it there, because on the one hand, they're not attracting new users into the ecosystem.
Right.
There's no one in the world, I'm going to say right now, without Facebook or Instagram, who says, you know something? Threads. I'm so interested in that form. I don't have Twitter, but oh yeah, I'll jump in on Threads.
Right.
So it's a market share exercise, but it's market share in terms of attention. So the idea is, if we were spending 2 hours on Instagram and Facebook, well, maybe we're now spending 3 hours because Threads is taking an extra hour. So the attention, the market share is in new users.
So instead of, right, so what they've understood is that if they want to stop you doom scrolling, which is part of the issue at the moment on Instagram and partially on Twitter, you don't realize you're doom scrolling multiple apps. So you doom scroll on Instagram and then you leave it and go and doom scroll on TikTok, and then you doom scroll on Twitter, and then you come and doom scroll on Threads. That's interesting in the first place, right? Like that they're just trying to spread out your interest. And by the way, when I looked at it, I don't go on Facebook. I don't have Facebook. I have Facebook by the need of validating my Instagram account. It looked very Facebooky, if that makes sense. Like it was a bit dad. A friend texted me and went, everyone's become a bit dad joke on the new Threads thing. And they were kind of right. Like it is a bit dad jokey, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe that's part of their attempt to be wholesome.
Right.
But the thing that you mentioned off there, which I'd like to talk about,
go for it,
how the aesthetic of Threads itself,
the spacing,
right, can change people into dad jokers.
Mm.
What is it about the way the Threads looks, do you think?
Things are laid out differently. I think, you know, there are also, I'd imagine, certain meta rules as to how text should be laid out and how, you know, the spacing and the white, and in contrast with that, it's just black and white, which I think helps it a lot.
It's much calmer than Twitter. There's many fewer characters.
In relation to screen space.
Right, with much more spacing, much more dead space.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how something so subtle can actually change the type of discourse.
Right.
It's not dissimilar to how if you talk about death before polling people politically,
right,
they go 10% to the right, but a hot drink puts them 10% to the left. We're super sensitive to these kinds of cues.
And I'm not sure that we 100% realize that. I don't know if we 100% realize how that works at this point.
No, like the UX guys and Meta, their brief will be something, I assume, like, hey, we want to create a platform like Twitter, but we want it to produce conversation that looks like X. And then you have to use all the design elements to produce the feeling emotionally conversation can emerge from that looks more wholesome.
Right. But this is kind of my thing, right? So I want to I kind of want to pause here for a second, and I'm going to tell you a story in a second. We're going to talk about basically two, I think they're Greek, what do you call them, like allegories? Yeah, like I guess Greece had allegories. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll talk about those in a second, because these, I think, are telling as to where we're going with all of this.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
So, Medium is the message. Marshall McLuhan, genius from the 1960s. If you don't know who Marshall McLuhan is, he wrote a very influential media book at the time, which was called The Medium is the Massage. And I think that was even a play on words, which showed that you basically just, you know, you read whatever you wanted to read due to the medium. And he believed that everything was a medium. So he believed that bricks were a medium. He believed that metal was a medium. He believed any object, just anything was a medium. But air, oxygen could be a medium if you wanted to assess it as such. And so it very much changes your worldview on the way. And I kind of subscribe to his worldview. I think it's a very interesting one. It was co-opted for a little while by the right wing in the 60s. And so I think that pushed him more to the fringe of social discourse. But actually, he always pretty much stayed true to what it was that he said. And most of the time he said, I think where we're going here is a more connected world. He said, I don't think that is necessarily a good thing. And he said, you know, I think we'll have it, but we won't like it. And I think we're kind of in that state now, right? Like, we've got it and we're not satisfied by it. We don't really appreciate it. But the thing that a few of the theorists who kind of were spawned by him, and you know, there is a whole school that is named after him, maybe in somewhere in Canada. I don't know where it is. Anyway, might be in Toronto. I think there's, I listened to a lecture the other day by someone from Toronto, from his university. They talk about two Greek myths, Narcissus and, to an extent, Echo. So Narcissus was fathered by a god with a nymph. Now, a nymph back then was like a little pixie fairy thing. And I think they were kind of considered to be like magical creatures, like very attractive. And they were kind of there. I don't really know, so I won't talk about that too much. But they were basically, they were quite sexualized and lived their lives differently to humans, should we put it that way. So humans, I think, were subject to a lot more of the pain of life, and nymphs were, you know, not. And then Narcissus would reach old age if he failed to recognize himself, was what the nymph was told, basically. Narcissus turned into a very beautiful young man, and everyone loved him. But part of his issue was that he had contempt for the people who loved him, and he had contempt for those around him. He wouldn't return their affection for that reason, because he had contempt for them, right? And so one day he walked into a pool of water to get a drink and saw his own reflection and became entranced by it. And ultimately he ended up killing himself because he couldn't have the object of his own desire. He desired himself, and he couldn't have that as a, you know, obviously you can't fuck yourself. You can go fuck yourself, but you can't. And that I always found quite interesting, like kind of this person who became entranced by their own image, their own reflection. I think very often social media attempts to reflect an element of our own interest, our own everything back to us. And I think Twitter hasn't reached that like level yet. But it does reflect like the good and the bad, I think, of society. And I think it reflects like the way that we use social media at the moment is showing us that I think there is a lot of discontent in our own self-image and how we construct self-image and how that is then reflected back to us. And I think this new platform, when I looked at it, I was like, it made it so evident to me what we're doing wrong in constructing social media. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's so perceptive. I've not thought about it in those terms before, but it's very obvious that social media has this dual function. In right. One hand, it makes our existing self-image worse because just we see comparatively. But equally, it's now such a thing. It's such a goal. It's such a North Star in constructing our self-image. So if you think, well, how do I want to come across? When you close your eyes and think that question, you're probably thinking via Instagram.
Right.
Or via YouTube or via Twitter.
Because they're also kind of shortcuts in a sense to it. By the way, I'm not sure everyone sees it that way. I mean, maybe Instagram is quite an accessible one. YouTube, I think, is quite a high gateway to gateway to entry. Just because it seems quite nebulous to upload a YouTube video. Instagram makes it a lot easier.
Totally. But it is interesting too. Like, I was watching Glastonbury on the TV and thinking that in some ways it was quite unnatural, like a weird dopamine hack, to have all of the base human desires on paper, like admiration, success professionally, success, admiration romantically, money, all of this stuff, to tens of thousands of screaming people while doing something you ostensibly really enjoy.
Right.
And it was interesting to me because I thought, hang on, well, why do all of these singers and rock stars, all of them, it's like a canon event, have drug issues and then go sober? Why are they on that train?
You're watching Post Malone.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, no, seriously though. And then you think, well, hang on, if their cup is truly being filled in the self-image way, which you can say is just an extension of what we secretly wish would happen to us on social media.
Right.
We want our self-image to be such that people are admiring.
Right. And so this leads me on to the allegory of Echo. And Echo was a nymph who was destined, I'm reading this, by the way, obviously. Echo was a nymph who was destined a fate that she could only repeat the sounds and last words of others. One day, she spotted and fell in love with Narcissus. She followed him through the woods, could not speak without repeating his words. So again, this, for me, there's like a reflection there on social media, but also the people on social media and the people that either we fall in love with or the people that are constructive for us to fall in love with, but also the people that we construct in our own minds that fall in love with us. So if only Post Malone met me, we'd echo each other's sentiments. We would, like, there would be this, you know, back and forth.
And when you dig one layer deeper, well, what's the benefit? The benefit is, I'll be elevated in terms of status.
Right.
Such that my self-image is more attractive to the baying masses.
Right.
Yeah.
And now maybe we're being a little cynical about that. Maybe there's a peachy side to all of this. Maybe there's someone that's using Threads right now, just absolutely kicking it, like loving it. I don't believe that necessarily.
The difficulty is with all these platforms is they're incentivizing something that's very human, which is with group animals.
Navel gazing.
Totally. And we want to be in a tribe and we want to have status. And social networks and social media is so effective primarily because it looks into that function.
Right.
Hey, here's a million people who like you. Hey, here's affection. Here's approval. So it's very, very difficult as a human, wired as a human, being a communal animal, to get out of that, which is why social media, like, A, we spend so long on it, and B, why it's linked to so many body disorders, self-image right. issues.
Do you think, though, that those things, like, there's an element of the chicken and the egg, putting the horse before the cart, all these kind of things, where those things exist, they are then exacerbated, or they exist after the social media? Like, would these things exist anyway? Would you have just found, magazines in previous eras were blamed for these kind of things? You know, portraits of the king were blamed for, do you know what I mean? There's always been this need through any popular media at the time to reflect the mood of that age.
I love that way. Yeah, social media has created nothing. It hasn't changed human behavior one iota.
It's Echo.
It's Echo and its expansion. I mean, what it's essentially done is say, hey, here are the most dopamine / cortisol things, approval, money, sex. Now, if you play the game right, you're going to have all this approval. I mean, that is no different at all to wanting to be in a magazine in the 50s.
Right.
A portrait taken in the 1750s.
Or have a silhouette done in Paris in the whenever, right?
I mean, it's why people have this thing of like, well, if it's not on social media, it doesn't count. And people at concerts take videos because it feels like, what a waste on some level to have this experience that you know would have social capital associated
right.
without the capture and then distribution of that social capital.
So I feel like social media should be redistributed or renamed It shouldn't be called social media. I don't think it is. I think it's a dishonest marketing of what the medium is. I think it shouldn't be called social media.
What would you call it?
Well, I can't really come up with a name right now. I guess off the top of my head, I would just call it kind of interaction or interactive media, or I call it stress media or something like that. But like, there's, do you know what I mean? That it's not so, it's the closest to social interaction that we come maybe through a media, but the goal is not how we define it.
The other distinction between that and social is that social interactions have some, by definition, level of give and take.
Yeah.
In order to have an interaction with anyone, you have to be fulfilling enough of their values, and there has to be this mutual exchange. Social media is effectively just, I'm so wonderful, and then everyone is monologuing, whereas real life interactions, by definition, have to have this cooperative effect.
Well, there has to be a cooperative element to interaction because, I mean, you're both kind of judging where the other one's position is to an extent. And then I guess that's also dictated by, your own self-image. I was listening to a podcast this morning called Hidden Brain, and it was about how much you enjoy or how much you think other people liked your interaction, your initial interaction, your long-term interactions. And the basic outcome, this is an hour-long podcast, it was fantastic. But the basic outcome was that initially your thoughts are that you came off worse than you did and that they came off better than they thought they did. And over time, I think it's called the Lichen effect. I think that's what it's called. There's Lichen something. And over time, basically you return to the mean, you return to where the reality is between the two of you. And, you know, that takes a year. It can take quite a while for you to return back to this.
Which speaks to an interesting function of human behavior.
Right.
Which is a heightened anxiety tends to make us less objective.
Right.
So after a year, the stakes are less high. Right. You're not thinking the relationship's going to end if you say the wrong thing.
Right.
And equally, because your first function with the anxiety is, I hope I've done okay. We just assume they've done great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really interesting observation.
And not to tie this, I apologize to everyone in my life for the fact that I do this the whole time, but not to tie this back into football. This whole regression to the mean thing,
right?
If you leave it long enough, things go back to average,
mm-hmm.
is fascinating, and it explains why sacking your manager, the new manager bounce, is bullshit. It's just you only sack a manager when things are terrible, and just automatically, just because in order for something to be terrible, it means two things need to be happening at the same time. One, the things you can control are going against you. But crucially, the things you can't control, Is your best player having a divorce? How's everyone sleeping? How good are the other, all those other variables also have to be going really badly. So the point is, if you're a football manager and you have 1 in 15, two things are happening. You're getting all the tactics wrong, but also all of the intangibles are going against you. If you continue to get the tactics wrong, just by giving it long enough, the intangibles will start going for you. Things improve.
Right.
So that's why the new manager bounce, or the hot hands theory, or, you know, there was a story in Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell of Israeli fighter pilots, and they couldn't work out what was going on, because if someone did really badly, they'd scream and shout at them, and then they'd do better. And if someone did really badly, they'd praise them, and then they'd do slightly better. And they'd go, well, what the hell is the right approach?
Mm.
You know, there's no evidence, neither. Neither were relevant. Just if someone's doing really badly, they slept badly on top of getting everything else wrong. Okay, so to tie this all back in, if you're super socially anxious about where you're sitting with someone, relatively speaking, you just need to give it long enough, the anxiety falls out and you regress back to the mean.
Right, and very often the impulse is to try to fix it in that moment, to tweet back, to comment, to, you know, to make a response video, to, you know, say something, you know, because we're kind of, I guess, to an extent, we are territorial. We're taught to, you know, respect ourselves, protect ourselves, all these kind of things. Maybe that is a correct response sometimes.
There's a bias to action, though.
Right.
Wait, I'm so shit at this.
Like, inaction is also action to an extent. Ignoring is a verb. To ignore is a verb.
Yeah, it's such a good point. I'm shit at this, like, especially with conflict.
Me too.
I'm so...
I'll reply to anyone on social media.
Yeah, and I find if me and a friend fight, and I know the answer is give it a day, I can't. I'd, like, want to resolve it now?
Sometimes I can, but I feel like that is basically, like you said, like you need to have slept well.
Yeah.
Basically, and, or the other variables need to be good. So if I've had a, you know, a bad client day or whatever it is, that in itself can impact everything else. And then you'll be more likely to reply and that can spiral.
And this is the thread / Twitter point. The club, FC Wimbledon, who I support, we, in my impression, since 2003, when we started, are the most successful club in England.
Mm-hmm.
We've had 6 promotions. We own the club, new stadium. If you went on social media, you would see nothing but complaining.
Right.
But here's the point. We actually don't complain very much relative to anyone else. It's just that before, that conversation happened in the pub. And then you'd go home and you'd forget about it.
Right.
But now, because of this bias to action and this territorial thing you mentioned, you write everything down. And all the things that you would have gone, oh, fucking pricks, like, useless, shouldn't wear the shirt. That now is written down forever.
And to an extent, you're held accountable for it, whereas before it would have been much more of a forgiving, knowing atmosphere. And that's quite interesting because Apple in iOS 17 has launched, and I'm not saying it will work, I'm just saying there is clearly an acknowledgement of needing to write down things, journal things, do this kind of thing, just release whatever it is that's in there somewhere. Because Apple in iOS 17 has given people a journaling app. Tell us how you're feeling, all these kind of things. And I'd imagine that that will have made some social media agencies or some social media platforms feel maybe a little threatened.
Social media agencies require us to fail to distinguish between, oh, just getting it off my chest and considered thoughts. Everything is considered
right,
to be a thoughtful thing that I actually think.
We will talk about that, the sense of ubiquity, in a second.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Right, so I'm going to take you through something right now, which I think works. This is called the Laws of Media. Now, there were 4 laws of media that Marshall McLuhan drew up. And I think in my humble experience, and I'm going to try and do this in sport and football on my own channel at some point in the future, the 4 laws can pretty much be applied to anything. You come away, maybe not with a watertight conclusion about some of this stuff, but you come away with more insight as to what the situation is. And that's why I kind of wanted to apply them here. I'll go through the 4 laws and then we can kind of apply them to some of social media, but specifically Threads and Twitter maybe, and go through some of that, right? So they're called the laws of media, brackets, 4 effects. It was actually colon, but brackets works better for me. Okay. Viewed in the form of simultaneous, I want to say tetrad? I've never even read that word before. McLuhan poses the following questions about media. What recurrence or retrieval of earlier actions and services is brought into play simultaneously by the new form? What older, previously obsolete ground is brought back and inheres in the new form? B. When pushed to the limits of its potential, the new form will tend to reverse what had been in its original characteristics. What is the reversal potential of the new form? C. If some aspects of the situation are enlarged or enhanced, simultaneously the old condition or unenhanced situation is displayed thereby. What is pushed aside or obsolesced by the new, and up they put it in inverted commas, organ? And D. What does the artifact enhance or intensify or make possible or accelerate This can be asked concerning a wastebasket, a painting, a steamroller, a zipper, as well as a proposition in Euclid or laws of physics. Euclid?
I know.
Coming up with a lot of interesting words here. It can be asked about any word or phrase in any language. These four laws came out in 1988. Is it a coincidence that they also came around in the year I was born?
I wasn't expecting that question.
Sure.
Clarify B for me. Say B again.
B. When pushed to its limits, or when the push to the limits of its potential, the new form will tend to reverse what had been its original characteristics. What is the reversal potential of the new form?
I really like that because A was like, well,
super insightful.
What's the, what is this a new form of?
Mm-hmm.
So Twitter or Threads is the town square.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, as of B, the reversal effect is it's so loud no one can say anything.
Right.
So like it's interesting. So like the algorithm and having to get the algorithm right and like it's so hard to be heard on Twitter is the reversal effect. So
right.
The initial town square with the speaker on the corner, everyone listening, it's now that. But then obviously as you tend towards the extremes, as they say, the initial purpose becomes very, very difficult to maintain.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess all four of those laws always get me thinking about whatever it is, right? Like you can think about football in most senses. You can think about, you know, TV. You can apply these to any medium. And I guess there is a slightly more complex conversation to be had here because like you said, like algorithm is something that can't necessarily be seen. The outcomes of algorithm can be seen, but as a user, we won't necessarily see algorithm. We will see the UI that's over the top of that. The UX, yeah. That's over the top of that, but we won't watch the computer working.
No, I mean, Twitter did reveal some stuff, which was interpreted by people who could code, but it wasn't much more insightful than if you put a picture 10 times your reach.
Yeah.
Do you want to say something interesting, though? What do you think a spelling mistake does to reach or a word that they don't recognize?
Well, that's interesting. Oh, I would have thought, I guess my thought would have been it would inhibit it, but you saying it's going to amplify it.
It inhibits it by 100 times.
Really?
So the reach, if they don't recognize a word, is a multiple times 0.01.
Which maybe speaks to the human idea of if I can't understand you, why would I pay attention sort of thing, right?
Totally. Also, something I've been wanting to get your take on here.
Yeah.
Is have you seen that Twitter have been resenting Reddit as well? All these AI companies coming in scraping millions of data points.
Yeah, they do
to inform their models.
Yeah.
They want to be paid for that.
Yeah,
which
of course.
Is reasonable.
Which seems fair enough. But also, should I not then also be paid?
Well, this is what I want to ask.
I'm a contributor.
Like, well, so technically, they probably own the content, right? I assume.
Sure.
If Lawrence writes a tweet, who's the owner of that digital data?
So there is something around this. You were able to sell your tweets a couple of years ago. People were able to sell their tweets, and some people did sell their tweets. Like you could, I think you could buy the first tweet as an NFT, but I'm not sure who owned it. I think there was like some sort of co-ownership, or I mean, I'm not even sure that it was IP that anyone could sell in the first place. I think NFTs were just a wild west. But
it is interesting because a book we all recognize as a piece of intellectual property.
Right.
There are tweets with significantly more reach than 99.9% of books. So it's not a bad question. Like who owns the tweet? And it's kind of an abstract question until you get something like scraping.
And yeah, and suddenly your data becomes more than just it has like a secondary use.
Did you catch that Dragon's Den episode where they had
is Steve Bartlett on it?
It was pre-Steve Bartlett,
possibly then. Yeah, possibly.
Someone came on and said, look, the open secret in advertising is they sell your data. Of course.
Sure.
Here's an app where you can profit from that selling of your data.
That's cool.
Which is cool.
It's called Instagram.
It's called. Yeah, exactly. But it does make you think. We are all producing a trail that's valuable for advertisers.
Just ask Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah. And we've had this conversation in the context of like, it's possible on YouTube to have an affiliate link where you're going to have to explain this.
So if someone tweets, someone clicks on your YouTube affiliate link, so say it's Amazon or whatever, like take them to Amazon, leaves a cookie in their whatever, like with their account. So suddenly their account is kind of tied to you for 24 hours and anything they buy in that following 24 hours. So they could do like a family shop in that 24 hours. You get a share of that because it's seen as you were referring them to the platform. Now, it's a very, very small share, but if you have a very high number of views and you have a lot of affiliate links and you're a camera reviewer or you are whatever, you get a pretty decent share of the cash.
And it just reveals that there's this underbelly, this underworld of like advertising data.
Right. And by the way, we're trusting people with that data. So we're trusting that they'll never like make that data public because there seems to be some form of agreement around that. Like that's the whole thing around TikTok, right? Like, where does TikTok store its data? It stores it in China. Why would China care about a law in America? They clearly don't.
I've never considered that public point before. But, you know, I don't want you seeing my advertisement recommendations that reveal that I'm super into
whatever it is.
Whatever it is I get up to on a Friday night.
But that's kind of the point, is like, you know, do they understand the rhythm of how you write? Could they identify you purely from the way that you punctuate?
Oh, that's a good question.
So say that you suddenly make a new account and you're typing and suddenly you get blocked and you're like, why is this? And it's like, we've identified rhythms and, you know, whatever it is in your typing, which show it's X, it's Jamie, which is probably the case. We're probably getting a little off topic, but you get what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, they definitely have done that. I mean, the Unibomber.
Right.
If I remember the TV show correctly.
Which you probably do.
Was discovered by his use of syntax.
Yeah.
Like, they just were like, oh, well, that's so ID specific. And I bet you actually, I mean, I don't know, right? But I bet it is quite ID specific.
It's how you spell, it's all these kind of things. And that's kind of where Threads, I think, is an interesting one for me. Like, this convenience, and obviously, you know, I'm not saying this again from like a conspiratorial side, but the convenience of the whole thing, oh, just transfer it over from one platform to another. When something is convenient, I think he's probably right to be cynical of it to an extent, because I think there's some transaction that you don't know about. There's something going on that you just can't see. And it's probably under the surface of the water there where Narcissus got himself caught and ultimately drowned.
And this is the interesting bit, because I think this is a very interesting development in terms of, well, how does it interplay with Twitter? Is the medium the message? As far as Meta's concerned, it's quite a boring business decision. It's like, well, we have capital and we can grab more attention. It's like just a market share play.
Yep.
The question though I have about that is like, does it signal, because you know, Meta were all in VR.
Yep.
And they wanted to design the metaverse. Is this them going, we're backing off that slightly, we need to have eggs in other baskets?
But that's kind of it, right? Is I'm kind of wondering what their strategy is with this, or whether this is literally just this seems easy for them.
Hanging fruit.
Yeah. But then you have to be willing, and I think this is where Twitter has learned down the years, to vary the capacity and the way that you can communicate. So they expanded the number of characters. That was obviously huge. It used to be 140. Now it's 240. Now it's even longer than that. You can thread things and all this kind of thing. Pictures became a lot better. Your uploads of videos, all these kind of things. They had spaces. Like there's a lot of like multiple functionalities to Twitter, which I think is quite interesting. And that's kind of like the integration of things like Periscope and the integration of other video platforms.
But then the question is, are Meta going to say, we need to do that? Or are they going to say, hang on, we've already done that through Instagram
and those things. So we want to differentiate. But those two apps go back and forth between each other. So essentially you're just switching windows. But I'd be interested to know what the mental or psychological impact is of seeing your phone switch windows between apps and how differently you'd use Instagram to the way that you would use Threads.
And crucially, whether your fatigue on Instagram is reset by going to Threads.
Well, that's definitely an interesting question. I think we need to find a psychologist over this and kind of just quiz them on a podcast or something.
Yeah, there's the guy that did the Facebook expose,
right?
Explaining how, I mean, so Twitter got in trouble because they had a slight delay between logging in and your notification number coming up. And the idea is that delay hacked your reward systems. So it was like pulling the slot machine. A certain number of notifications constituted good reward systems. A low number of notifications was bad. And those were intentional UX decisions by psychologists. So there is a little bit of a science to this, and it would be interesting to chat to someone who understands the nuts and bolts.
Yeah. I hope you guys have enjoyed the unpacking of the early Threads. I think ultimately what we've come to is, the medium being the message
is probably the best message we can come up with here. I don't think it's a particularly good medium yet. I think it's still quite basic, but it will progress. I'm not sure that any platform that says we are for good or we are for happy or we are for positive is necessarily the healthiest place to go. Sounds a little bit like taking some sort of happy pill before you go on a platform. It's like,
it sounds fucking Black Mirror, actually. Elon Musk said this. He was like, well, I'd much rather have big people being attacking me on Twitter than, I think this was this morning, than the false be happy of Instagram.
Yeah.
Is that grumpy to say that I'm all on board?
I don't think that's grumpy. I just think it's what you aim towards in terms of your interactions. What's your interaction that you want? Maybe you're not always ready to hear people's like terrible tweets about you. Like, you know, definitely in the time when I was busy, I wasn't canceled, but like I was, you know, in the time when I had a lot of people attacking me, there's been a couple of times now, I've not always been ready to hear that feedback. It's like 10 at night or I'm on holiday or all these things. And you just don't need, they're ready to give that feedback. But why is the app feeding me this? That was kind of going to be one of my finishing points here, is like, this isn't progress. This is copy and paste. And actually, I think progress in social media is what we're yearning for. This is not that.
Here's my question for you about that. I've seen Peter Crouch say 70,000 people chanting at you, not a problem. One voice at a lower league ground that you can hear, that's the one that hurts because you can hear it.
Oh, that's so interesting. And also because of how the impact of that, what the impact of that is. Yeah.
Right. So my question to you is, when you've had periods where being in the public eye, people are on your case, is the thing that hurts or that bothers you the specifics? Or is it like, so I guess what I'm asking is it an accumulative effect where the 70,000 equivalent voices, you go, wow, that's a lot of shit coming my way? Or is it, you know, like the specific three comments?
I really took a lot of time to think about this the other day, because I'm currently like developing a documentary. And I realized, I think different people yearn for different things on social interactions. And the thing, this is very open what I'm saying here. I like yearn to be understood. I really am desperate to have my communication be as connective and as symbiotic in the experience of it as possible. And that's not me saying that everyone has to have the same experience as me. What I mean is, I want to know that when I speak, there is an honest acceptance of what it is that I'm saying. And there have been a few, you could term them quite traumatic experiences for me in my life, where either people deliberately misinterpret what it is that I'm trying to achieve or say, or just purely because there is maybe poor communication on my behalf or cultural differences, there is a lack of understanding of the context around those things, right? And I think that is where I find my struggle is with social media. I don't care, so I can read a lot of negativity and it'll probably have some sort of negative mental impact on me. I don't know what it is, but I don't feel it ever impacts me as much as someone not understanding what my motives are. And I think like there's something really quite profound about that to me.
So to clarify, it's not like, oh, generic negativity is a problem. It's I've been misunderstood.
And the outcome is misunderstanding, right?
I understand. So you'd much rather take a batch of random negativity, but also a group of people who get it, understand the mechanics of what you're saying, why you're saying it. That is definitely preferable to generic positive, but no one's got it.
So interesting. And you know, I know there's the use of comedy, and comedies can sometimes be to deliberately misinterpret someone or all these kind of things. I think that's very different. Like, you know, there's by all means comedy on, but like, I think there are also people who have bad intentions. And I think that's where, when we're talking about free speech, talking about racism, all these kind of things, and, you know, anti-something. That is problematic, because racism and a lot of the interactions, John Stewart termed it pettifogging. It was a petty form of just
making the situation as difficult to interpret and see your way through as possible. And that comes down to understanding. If you deliberately get in the way of someone else's understanding of a situation, for me, that's like, that's a sin as far as I'm concerned. Because I think that was the original definition of a sin, was that you were shooting. So if a sin was the same word, I think it might be Arabic, it might be another language, as when you shot an arrow and you missed the target. And the whole idea was they would say sin. I don't know if it's the same word, but at least you were shooting in the right direction. I think the real issue is when you're not even shooting in the right direction and you're not trying to, then there's like a deliberate mulching, which I have like real contempt for. People who deliberately misinterpret what you're saying.
It's the bad faith thing.
It's terrible faith. And we were having this discussion around cricket earlier and like just sportsmanship. It just irks me to a tenth.
And the mechanics of it are, I don't like you, or rather I don't like what I believe you represent.
Right.
And therefore, whatever you say, I'm going to interpret in a way to confirm that conclusion.
Right. And there's a confirmation bias to it. There's a therefore a psychological effect of that. And to an extent, like you can just keep going down these, you know, how people are cast and the archetypes they fulfill and all these kind of things. I think it's an incredibly unfair way of finding interactions in the world.
And this is why Twitter is particularly bad, because the nature of having a profile means you kind of build your sandcastle on a self-image of I'm for this and anti this, which makes it very fucking difficult psychologically to interpret people in good faith, because, you know, half of the things that are said are going to push back on your self-image. So it feels like a victory to interpret things in bad faith, because it secures your identity.
And what it does is it validates how much more information you have to put on the platform in order to make the image of you more 3D. Because the less information you put up there, the more kind of, I guess, you know, the more you choose to, you know, be reserved on the platform, the harder it is, unless you're a very good, efficient communicator, to interpret what your position is. And that's kind of, I'm wondering how much platforms like Twitter, like Threads, like Facebook, like Instagram, deliberately try to suck people into defining themselves politically, you know, whether they're pro-LGBTQ+, all these kind of things, to just encourage any form of interaction. And sometimes the best thing to do is to not interact, to not like step into the fray. And I think that's where I don't really like Threads. It feels a little superfluous to me. It's a bit like, why are you doing this? You know, what, like I said earlier, where's the progress in what you've done here?
I don't know that there's any obvious benefits to the consumer.
Right.
There's very obvious benefits for Instagram. Brilliant. We can now say that Meta has more average hours per day. But as the consumer, it's kind of a copy and paste job. That's no obvious improvements. Okay, maybe it'll emerge. No obvious improvements on what's gone before. And another platform we now have to manage.
And the thing that irks me about this is, so I've met a few people from Meta. They seem like very nice people. Some of them weren't, but some of them were. If we tabled some of these talking points to them, some of them would just ignore them. They've got other jobs. Some of them would deliberately misinterpret what it was that we were trying to say and just cast us as, oh, these guys just want to be able to remain in the gray, or like whatever it is. We just want to have positive interactions. We're trying to encourage the world to be a more positive place, blah, blah, blah. And some of them would, in deliberate terms, try to remove us from the conversation because it doesn't suit their goals. And that's what I'm talking to about. That's what I'm talking here about understanding. Like, there's a lot of users on Instagram and stuff, and, you know, on Meta in general and Twitter. The majority of the ones that I see invited to the Meta offices or invited to that space are the most generic, arguably positive in arbitrary terms. But that irks me. Like, that gets to me when I look at it. I'm like, why aren't you? And then, you know, all the conversations they have where they go, great to chat to CEO blah, blah, blah today, who came in and told us how he survives in a social media age. And I'm like, I listened to your conversation. I got nothing from it.
Yeah, but there's no social incentives to do anything different.
Exactly. And that's what's troubling for me is, And again, it comes back to the same conclusion I just made. What is the social incentive for getting on Threads apart from not being involved?
The whole problem with Meta as a vibe, and this is loose, is it's basically a bunch of people on the left wanking themselves off together.
Sure.
The circle jerk. But the thing is, and I'm on the left, but there's no incentive to do it differently because all the social incentives, politically, socially, romantically, professionally, financially, are to just join in the circle jerk.
Yeah.
And that's where Twitter actually, in some ways, for all the hate speech and stuff, is a little bit of a relief because it's not obviously got the same set of incentives.
Yeah.
And this just feels like another layer to the circle jerk.
And I guess that is where we will end this week's, or today's podcast at least. Thanks a lot for joining us on the feed. Jamie, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Lawrence.
If you've not already hit subscribe, then hit it. And if you'd be so good as to share the podcast, someone actually nominated us this week. I think it was only like one person for the British Podcast Awards, but it was only one person.
Hey.
But there they were.
Well, thanks to my mum.
Yeah, thank you. And well, yeah, so that's two. And yeah, it was really interesting to chat to you, Jamie. Thanks for coming in. We will have more sport content in the coming days. A lot more sport content, actually. But yeah, until then, goodbye.
Thanks, Lawrence.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.